Ryan, and I'm back with the Rue Nation novel, part 3, chapter 31 and 32. We're almost done. It's been a while, huh? All right, let's do it. Housekeeping. You can listen to us everywhere. Email us at podcastcore@gmail.com. Visit us at podcastcore.com for all of our info. Remember, that's podcast C-O-R. Follow us on all the platforms because that helps us with discoverability. We appreciate it. And leave a like and comment wherever you listen. But word of mouth has gotten us to this point. So tell a friend, just one, to prepare for the beginning of the end by listening to the Casuals of Runeterra podcast. And there's a lot here. So let's just get going. Chapter 31. So chapter 31 has about 5 scenes in it. And obviously we're touching on all the major events that are currently going on at this point. And we start with Ryze, Tyrus, and the children that are with them hiding behind a wall on the outskirts of Halea. And unfortunately, between them and the old woods, remember that was their goal, is trying to get out of the city and then figure it out from that point. But there's a dozen knights waiting on the hill in between this point. And this completely screws up their original plan. And after noticing these knights, they notice some other desperate Hellions, which didn't have a plan. They were just trying to get out of harm's way, rush towards the old woods without seeing them, and are immediately attacked by these bloodthirsty knights and slaughtered. And the group begins to think, okay, what's another plan? And during this time, Tyrus is kind of having some internal conflict and even begins to apologize to Ryze for neglecting his teachings and holding him back and not keeping his promises. And he promised that if they survive this moment, he'll be a better master, right? He'll try more. And Ryze, also feeling guilty for his part in all this, promises that if they make it out of this, he'll be more attentive and patient as a student. So they make that promise to each other to give them something to live for, right? And then Ryze comes up with a smart conclusion after this. He says, since the knights are pushed up while attacking the city and guarding the escape routes, they are technically, quote unquote, behind enemy lines. So this should mean that at the docks where they came from, there should be less knights, right? And if they head back to the docks, they can try to get a boat and leave before they're chased. Good plan, Ryze. And to his surprise, Tyrus immediately says, yeah, let's do it. And this takes us to scene 2. So scene 2 begins with Grail and Viego. Remember this little dastardly duo, continuing deeper into the tower, and they're just slaying more masters before Malgurza appears. And Grail tells Viego, wait. And he tells Malgurza, give me the keystone around your neck. And she refuses and explains her key is useless alone, and the other one has been lost for a long time. And Grail, to his pleasure, gets to reveal to Malgurza that he has the other key, and he's accessed the Seeker Vault. And Malgurza automatically puts two and two together. She's pissed, but she now understands how the Camivorians got the Waystone from Grail, because that's where he got the Waystone. And she still refuses to give him the key, and once again, this is exactly what he wanted to hear, and he follows up by throwing his sickle and striking her in the chest, and she falls to the ground. And as she falls to the ground, Erlik takes the key from her. He turns to Viego and says, now you can kill them, great king. And Viego summons Sanctity and goes to work on the remainder of the room. And this takes us to scene 3. Scene 3 goes back to Hecarim and Callista, where he's looming over her and he finally decides to attack using his glaive. And they're fighting, and Callista's trying to reason with him still. God damn it, Callista. And he lets it be known that he doesn't care. He's doing his part for his king. All of the stuff that was promised before is gone. Now he just cares about destroying her, Laedros, and the host. And then Laedros intervenes. So Hecarim swaps his focus to Laedros, because you have to. And while he does that, Callista swaps her focus to the knights surrounding them to give Laedros room to fight Hecarim. Hecarim's able to land a deep blow on Laedros, but Laedros tanks the blow and grabs the weapon with one arm, and Hecarim can't get it loose. And then he drives with his other hand his sword down so powerfully that it crushes one side of Hecarim's armor, and it crushes into his flesh and drives him into the ground. And this brings Hecarim to his knees, and Ladros is now towering over him with his sword ready to strike. And he says, "Die knowing it was a low-born bastard who bested you." And this takes us to scene four. So in scene four, we're now back with the Rise group, and they're hiding quietly behind this wagon as they're making their way towards the docks because they hear approaching footsteps. And Rise begins building his power, hops out to unleash it, and then notices is Zhendikaya and her assistants doing the same thing they're doing. And she tells them they had the same plan, but they were told by Callista to go to the Daggerhawk to escape with their crew. Rise is like, "That's actually a great idea. We didn't even think about that." She also tells him, though, that Callista is not with them because she decided to stay behind for a last stand. And at this point is where he regrets all of the poor interactions he had with her and knew that would follow him for the remainder of his life, because she's essentially giving her life for them to continue and to be able to fight back against whatever the result is of this raid. And this takes us to scene five. So scene five is the final scene of this chapter, and we're back with Grail and Viego again as they make it to the Hall of Conjunction. And this is a hall that's designed by magic and contains this infinite ceiling depicting the night sky accurately. And Ehrlich begins to move these columns, and you start to see specific patterns in the light shift, and the stars begin to move in reverse direction until they align as needed, and then the floor begins to shift and slowly sink. And at this point, this is very similar to if you've played any puzzle game or any like action adventure games that have these massive old rooms made of magic, and there's a puzzle to try to progress. It's like that. So this is a part where I would definitely go read, because it's really well descripted. It's like three pages of descriptions on how this room functions to be able to unlock one of the most important places on Earth, right? So it makes sense for the complexity. But at this point, once they get it open, essentially, the custodians rush in, the remaining custodians, and along with them is a wounded Malgurza. Ehrlich makes a quip about how she just won't fucking die. And then she tries one more time to plead with him and warn him again about how unstable this rune is that's at the bottom of the waters. And they can't fathom what will happen because no one knows, which is why they've been so secretive about it even existing. Grail is fully committed to this, ignores her final warning, and he pushes the keystones into place, opens the door, and there before him lies the Waters of Life. And this takes us to chapter 32. So far, I know this has been kind of a quick jump back and forth, but we're at the end of the book, right? We're wrapping up these loose ends during this battle to see where we end up. And unfortunately, we kind of know, but we're going to get the details in this next chapter. Chapter 32. So this is only two scenes, but they're two massive scenes, which makes sense because the most important stuff happens at this point. So we start back with Callista, Ladros, and Hecarim. And before Ladros can deliver this killing blow, Callista yells at him to wait. Once again, damn it, Callista. And Ladros is baffled, but she believes that they need to keep Hecarim in some form of being alive so that his knights will follow orders. And following this order, he stops, and then that gives her time to say, "Hey, I'm going to make Hecarim an offer. You get to live. You tell your knights to stand down. That way I can go after Viego and stop him." And Hecarim laughs. And this is the part where, like, you know, the worst person you've ever met makes a good point. Hecarim laughs and he tells her that, "Hey, remember when we offered to help you stop Viego a long time ago and you chose not to, no matter what we said?" And he's right. He's right in this moment. No matter how much we like Cal as a character, or I like Cal as a character, no matter what we think about it up to this point, she's made the majority of the poor decisions that are directly leading to this being able to happen. All of her poor decisions have added up to this moment. So it's really hard for us to to not empathize. I mean, we can empathize with her situation, but to feel bad for her or to blame Hecarim. I mean, Hecarim sucks. He's evil. But all of this happening here is because directly of Cal's actions, point to point to point, that we've mentioned throughout this whole book. But anyways, he says, okay, cool. I can guarantee that. She also wants him to guarantee he won't change his mind because, you know, backstabbing her would not be in her favor as well. And he tells her, okay, but there's a condition. I still want that marriage. And she can't believe it. She's like, why would you want after all of this? He says, because I don't care about you. I don't love you. I want to become king and I need you to become king. And Laedros is yelling. He's yelling at this point, telling her, you know, he's lying. Don't believe him. He has a forked tongue. How much more do you need, Cal? And she thinks this is for his benefit. So she's still trying to go through with it. And she lets him rise back to his feet, gets back on his horse. And she notices, oh shit, Laedros is still bleeding from that wound from the glaive. And she runs over to him. But now he's like getting weaker. He's turning pale and his eyes are slowly losing focus. And she kind of gives him a final kiss goodbye. And then suddenly there's the sound of stomping hooves behind her. Laedros reawakens, like his eyes go wide and he's trying to tell her, look out behind you. And then Hecarim's glaive rams through her back and out her chest. And she's stunned, but she understands that she made her final mistake. And of course he would betray her. He's been betraying her all the way up to this point. And she should have known better. And then Hecarim says to all of his knights, I'm going to tell them to convince everyone back in Camivore that we were wed on the way back before we were attacked by vengeful Hellions. And the masters end up killing you. And I attempted to fight in your name and we made it back alive. Therefore, he can be king. And as she's fading and he says this and he has this, you know, evil look on his face, she talks about the ancestors coming to take her away, right, as a soldier who's done her duty, and she's resisting. And as she's resisting, she curses Hecarim, vowing to find a way to make him pay before she ultimately collapses to the ground. And Laedros is watching this, because remember, she's holding Laedros during this moment. And his eyes go wide and he goes wild and he stands back up and goes full frenzy mode, trying to get to Hecarim. And Hecarim turns his horse, takes off in the other direction, and yells to his men to kill them all. And then soon after, Laedros falls, Callista's eyes finally go blank, and they're both dead, and the final stand has ended. And this takes us to scene two. So scene two takes us back to Erlik and Viego. Seeing the waters, Erlik rushes over and just begins chugging as much as he can, which is reckless, but hey, at this point, what do you, like, it's turned to hell on earth or hell on Runeterra at this point. He notices the shades that we've seen before standing around, but they're just motionless. They're not bothering him. So they don't get in the way of him enjoying this, you know, disgustingly pleasurable moment for him, knowing that he did it. He won. He reached his goal. And he looks over to Viego, who's in his own world of delusion, holding his dead wife, and Erlik holds his sickle ready to strike. He's like, I can just hit this dude in the back of the head. I no longer need him for my goal, but he hesitates because he's Erlik and he's curious. He can't suppress his interest in the full power of waters being displayed, so he waits. He wants to see what happens, and we get to see what happens. So Viego begins to walk slowly deeper into the pool with Isolde's body, and he lets it just float. And her body begins to sink deeper and deeper, but the specter of her form continues to float on top. And her eyes become these pale lights and they flicker open. She looks at Viego and she begins to panic in horror. And she says, what have you done? And with this rage, she starts to float up from the water, looking down at Erlik with rage because she knows this man has played a role in whatever's happening. And she moves in a blur across the room, grabs Sanctity from a corpse that it's still stuck in of one of the dead custodians. And at this time, Viego's kind of trapped in this delusion and he's looking at her, looking up at her like a goddess, like a miracle. and he says, come to me, my love. And she does that, but with an expression of rage on her face and sanctity in her hand, and she pierces Viego until the hilt touches his chest and his blood just begins to pour into the water. And his face finally turns to shock when he realizes what's happening. He's like, oh shit. And the pool starts to splash and spark. That's not good. That's not a very good sign. Water's not supposed to do that. So Grail, watching all this happen, remembers what Malgurza said, and he begins to panic. And sanctity starts to cause Viego, you know, as it has in the past, to wither. That's what happens when you kill somebody with sanctity. But the pool is healing him, and it causes this endless agonizing loop of destruction and, you know, reconstruction of his form. And the pool's not, like, the water's not handling this event well. So it's becoming darker and darker. And there's this black mist that begins to form. And Isolde starts to lift Viego with his sword from the water and says, you never loved me. Had you cared for me at all, you would have let me go. And this completely breaks his trance. And then she dives with the sword in him back into the pool, going deeper and deeper, and the chamber begins to crack and shake and groan with the force of just all of this ancient magical energy colliding with each other. And Grail could feel something catastrophic was happening, so he tries to turn and run. But it's too late, because the ruination has begun. And that's where we end. So, man. all of this is crazy, man. I want to say at the end here that I enjoy this detailed description that was chosen for how the runation triggered. This is a very important moment, right, for the overall lore of Runeterra moving forward. So this was a good way to handle it. You know, this is something that I wouldn't say is easy to do for such a big moment in Runeterra's history. So hats off as always. And we only have, I think, two more episodes left. We're going to finish the book, and then we're going to bring Hetch back in here and give you guys one last hurrah on this. You know, I feel like we've been on a journey. It's been so long as we've gone chapter by chapter through this, but it's been a fun ride, and I appreciate you for coming along on that ride and having the patience as these episodes came out. So with that being said, as always, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with the next episode. And as Hetch always says, take care, everybody.